Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
As you get ready to expand your knowledge this offseason, make sure to save the date for USA Football's 2020 National Conference taking place February 21st through the 23rd in Louisville, Kentucky. This is more than just a clinic. It's your chance to hone your ability to teach proven and effective techniques while connecting with coaches across the country. Most coaches are satisfied if their regional clinic delivers just one or two nuggets of information. National Conference delivers a one-of-a-kind, high school-focused, live field experience that will give you an abundance of drills and techniques to improve your team's performance. Coaches can deep dive into both X's and O's and technique at classroom and chalk talk sessions. Finally, USA Football delivers top keynote speakers year after year. Here's a few of the keynotes from previous years: Mike Tomlin, John Gruden, PJ Fleck, and Jeremy Pruitt. As an added bonus this year, paying attendees can get access to the advanced tackling system and contact system for blocking and defeating blocks following the event, and have a chance to earn the new advanced contact certification. If you're ready to get to work on next season, don't miss out on USA Football's National Conference. Learn more at nationalconference.usafootball.com/podcast. Enter the code PODCAST179 to save at registration. Today's podcast finishes up the best of series that we've put together here for the last month or so, and we saved a really good one here for the end. This is the highlights of the leadership journey from the 2019 season. I know some of you would have listened to these recently, but I could tell you in going back through these, it is highly valuable to listen to some of this stuff again. These are some concepts and ideas I feel that make a difference to you, not just in coaching, but in life. And I think BK has put together some great thoughts for us over his time on the podcast and certainly leveled up in 2019. So here's the first clip, and this one is from our first show of 2019. BK talks about things that if you expect it from your athletes, you better live it as a coach. He talks about practicing the principles that you are trying to preach to your players. He talks about managing emotions and behaviors as a man and setting an example for your team. And the main thing is you have to live the standards that you demand from your players.
Yeah, and I'm going to come hot out of the gates here, Keith, because you guys know if this is your first time listening, I deliver the truth with love, but I don't hold back. If you have listened before, then you already know this. And so we're going to start right at, we're not going to start back at square one. We're going to start, you know, climbing up to level 8, 9, and 10 here from the beginning. Here's the standard, the unflexible if you're a coach. If you expect it from your athletes, you better be living it as a coach. Full stop, Keith. If you expect it from your athletes, you had better be living it as a coach. And coaches have some ground to cover and gaps to close on this right now, because I'm looking around and I'm seeing, and I don't think social media has helped on this, coaches who have drifted. I don't believe coaches got into this for a bad spot. Okay. I don't want this to be, you know, criticism and judgmental. I don't want this to be a character flaw, but nonetheless, it can get interpreted by that from other people, but I'm not going to assign it to a character flaw. But too many coaches have drifted to preaching principles they don't practice. And they deliver it with a shocking lack of empathy for what they're asking players to do on things coaches aren't actually executing themselves. If you want your players to be emotionally in control, you have to show them as a man how to be emotionally in control. How you manage your emotions and display them to your athletes, around your athletes, when your athletes are watching you, has a far more significant impact than what you tell your athletes to do with their emotions. And so this gap between what we expect from our athletes and what we are living as a coach, it has to get closed. I think there's nothing more important that you'll do as a coach than living the standards that you demand from your players. And it's more than just football, Keith, because I view this in life. The standards have to apply to the people who set them. They have to. I think we might have even talked about that topic before on a podcast. But the standards have to apply to the people who set them.
In this next segment, BK talks about the importance of applying real discipline and how it can be a shortcut to getting where you need to go as a person or as a team. He also points out that there is a distinct difference between discipline and obedience, and he explains that here.
Even for people with a pretty solid understanding of discipline, they still don't use the word discipline as the gateway to getting there faster. And that's the thing I really want people to wake up to, is if you attach discipline to anything, and I mean real discipline, we'll come back and talk about the word, but you attach discipline to anything and then compare that to going after the same kind of thing without discipline, you're going to get there faster with discipline, and you're going to get there more reliably. So you look at how many things in our lives we would love to say, future state, you can get there quicker and you can get there more reliably, meaning you give yourself a better chance to actually make it happen, right? There's no guarantees. And if you attach discipline to anything, it doesn't mean you're for sure 100% going to get it. It simply means that you give yourself a better chance to get there faster and you increase the reliability and the confidence that it can actually happen, but there's no guarantees in most areas of life, right? Like you attach discipline to your diet and exercise and you give it 12 straight months, I'm still going to say there's no guarantee, but it's as close as you can get to a guarantee, and you are going to like the results that you produce if you are disciplined for 12 straight months in diet and exercise, period, point blank. So bringing this word discipline and helping people recognize it's the choice to use that to increase the speed, the momentum, which a lot of people in athletics really like, right? Discipline really feeds momentum well, the reliability of everything. And we just attach it to it and watch what happens. Put them on timelines and compare the discipline path to the undisciplined path. Now, you know, we've talked a little bit about this before, but let's go back, right? We need to redefine discipline to rediscover it. So let's table the shortcut, reliability, efficiency, get there faster notion for a minute. And let's square ourselves on what do we mean by discipline. And what I mean by discipline is choice. It's choice. Okay. Here's what we have to let go of. And coaches, I'm going to beg you and I'm going to plead with you. I'm going to take a step out of maybe my norm. My norm would be, you know, to deliver a straight up lightning bolt message here. I'm going to go the opposite direction. I'm going to ask you, I'm going to beg you, I'm going to plead with you, please stop defining discipline as doing what you're supposed to do when you're supposed to do it the way you were told to do it. Please remove that definition from discipline, because it's not discipline. That's obedience. Somebody who obeys authority because authority told them to do it a certain way, that's an obedient person. If you want people to be obedient, then please just ask them to be obedient or tell them to be obedient. If you want them to follow rules that you set, and you simply want to say, I'm going to make rules, and then between your obedience to me and you following the rules, you're going to be compliant with the rules that I lay out, then ask people to be compliant and ask them to be obedient. Say, I don't want you making choices. I don't want you thinking. I don't want you considering. I want you to look at the rule. I want you to look at what I told you to do, and I want you to be compliant to the rule, and I want you to be obedient to what I say. and then go turn them loose. If you can get a bunch of people to do that, and you can set good rules, and you can provide good direction as a leader, then lean into that, because that might work for you. I don't think it's the most efficient, and I think that's getting a lot harder in today's world, and it puts a whole lot of pressure on you, because you are not going to be perfect, and you are not infallible, and so you will eventually have rules, and you will set directives with authority that if people follow them will be the wrong thing, and then you would better have a very small ego, and you would better not get defensive when people come back and criticize you and call you out for it. And you better approach that back with humility. But if that's how you want to go, go. But don't confuse that with discipline. Discipline is choice. Discipline is training your people how to make their own choices in a team environment, in alignment with what works well for the team, in alignment with what their job is, in alignment with standards, not rules, but standards that you have set. So this is the difference, Keith. A team with discipline, a player with discipline, knows how to make his own choices. He doesn't need the coach in his ear at all times. He doesn't need the authority and the rules and the obedience and the compliance imposed upon him. He doesn't need a command and control person, because he knows how to make choices based on standards the coach put out and taught him how to make. Do you see the same thing I see in the confusion with the word discipline and how many ways it gets put out by coaches, and how many ways it gets taught and preached at kids, that no wonder people are resistant to discipline given how it's promoted?
We're at a time of the year where you're probably getting ready to present your new plan for this next season, build on the last plan, but it's really a chance to step back and think about what you believe. And in this next segment, BK talks exactly about that, taking a step back and learning how to effectively identify exactly what you believe in as a coach. He gives a process here for identifying your beliefs. So BK, looking at those three things, coach somewhere out there, 20% of them, sitting down for the first time, maybe really digging into what do I believe? How do we take them through that process? I mean, starting with self, we could discuss, I mean, you could use me as an example, ask me questions, whatever it might be, but I guess it's something illustrative for our coaches.
Yeah. So let's make it really simple. And put it this way, right? What would be the worst thing that we could do? Or let me take a step back. Sometimes identifying the thing to do is by identifying the barriers to doing it that would actually either make it worse or confuse us. There's a lot of ways to get confused, but say, what do I believe? There's a lot of ways to start spouting off, you know, silly stuff about what do I believe? So what's the easiest way to start clarifying what you believe? Well, I'll give you the exact same thing. I was working with a Major League Baseball team right now, and we're doing this right now with a Major League team. Grab a pen, grab a blank piece of paper, lined, and here's what you're going to do. You're just going to take a couple days, and you're going to do a stream of consciousness, and you're going to write down, I believe, and then you're going to let whatever comes out, come out. And then whatever you write down, then you go to the next line, and you say, I believe, and you let the next thing out. And you just fill up a notepad as long as stuff is coming out of you. And here's what you'll find out in that process, Keith. What you'll find out is you'll find out where you're clear, where you're not. You'll find out where you're confident and where you're a little confused. You'll find out where you thought you were clear, but in fact, you weren't clear. You'll find out where I believe in this sometimes, but then not that other times. And you'll be like, oh, I actually believe in some competing things depending on the context. Huh. If that's what I believe, I wonder how people are experiencing me if I'm having this much trouble articulating my own beliefs on how people are experiencing me with what they want, what I want from them. That makes sense? Like if I have this much trouble writing down, and not to say trouble in a bad way, but like if you can't sit down and say, okay, like I believe, and then you've got, you know, the five things that you know are right there in your whole life and everything comes from them, which not a whole lot of people can do that right off the bat, then what about the people who are following you? You know, how can they align with those beliefs if that's the case? So that's why I would like to have everybody start. Even people who feel like they've got a pretty good list of core values. I just want you to sit down and write down, I believe this. And then they'll ask the questions, well, should I do it for my team? Is that what I should be thinking? I believe that my team should. And I say, no, I just want you to write down, I believe. And then I want you to write down what you believe. This is the whole point. I want you to write down what you believe. Because once you get what you believe on paper and out of your head, you can start to look and evaluate how it makes sense. Which beliefs fold up under other beliefs, which beliefs you're like, yeah, that one's rock solid. Or this one say, you know, like, no, like this one's more general. Like I generally believe that, right? Like you might write down some things that have nothing to do with football whatsoever, but they at least inform you about how you see the world. And they inform you about maybe some core beliefs for the team that relate to some general beliefs about life. You say, oh, okay, that's not going to be a core belief that drives our team, but boy, I really think that's a good supporting belief. So it's not going to make its way into my core culture playbook, but boy, I do think that's important. And so I don't want that to be a lot. That's more of a teaching point that I'd really like our staff to support, but it's not one of our driving factors. And you'll get to that eventually, but you might fill up a page, you might fill up half a page. And I say, give yourself a week to just write these things down. Like, I think people hustle through this, Keith. I really do. I think they believe that they ought to be able to write it down or ought to be able to fly. I mean, come on. Now, you said it yourself. It's simple, but there's a lot to this. So you got to give yourself time, like the weight room. You know, you got to just put some reps in and flex the muscles, and you got to let your brain and your heart and your, like, you know, you got to let all of this stuff kind of marinate on this for a while. And you got to detach yourself to a large extent from the coach speak, and you got to get away from the culture playbooks or the culture value systems or the quotes you've heard from other coaches you like and admire, because copying somebody else's beliefs, that's never worked. That doesn't work for humans. That doesn't work for coaches. You got to figure out what you believe. And for most people listening, I would go so far as to say, that's a process that you're going to need to go through, not something that ought to just fly out of you that is going to be locked in from the beginning.
When talking about leadership, a lot of times we get into these conversations about a coach-led team versus a player-led team. In this next segment, BK talks about establishing leaders on a team, regardless of if it's a group of players or that player-led team, a single player, or the coaches. The point is, a team needs leadership regardless. And he discusses the challenges of getting young people to lead young people.
Yeah, and obviously we need coaching and guiding through the process. So if we start with the first, which is teams need leadership, and we start to say, okay, let's start with being indifferent. Again, just because we're going to start there, not because it's where we're going to finish every time or what happens. But let's just start with, I'm indifferent where the leadership comes from, but we need to get the leadership. Meaning on some teams, it's going to be players and it'll be a group. On some teams, you'll either get a special young person or you'll get a young person who responds really well to a call or coaching and they step into a role and the team rallies around one person. In my mind right now, you get a team that has like a Tim Tebow type character on your team, and great. But how many teams have, you know, that kind of a person on it? Whether they come that way or they develop into that is just not very often. We need to have that on there. And then if we're indifferent as to where it comes from, then the question that we want to look at is, what is the transition or why do we rush to what we'll talk about next, Keith? We'll talk about, you know, how do we do some of that transition from player-led or from coach-led to player-led, if we wanted to go that way. I think the second question is, why do we rush from a coach-led to a player-led, or why do we push for that so hard? And, you know, I think you can chime in here with maybe the feeling from a coach perspective, and this might be a good topic to maybe get some coaches around and talk about off this podcast and maybe start a discussion around this. But, you know, so often I see I see coaches trying to become player-led, and they hurry players into it who aren't ready. They ask players to do things that they're not equipped to do, and the consequence is that standards slack. Work doesn't get done. Sometimes work doesn't get done at all. Sometimes it doesn't get done up to the quality that we want. And leadership goes missing. And a coach will say something like, well, this is your team. Or, you know, hey, you guys have to want this. And I respect that there may be differences of opinion on this. And so I'm just sharing mine. I just don't view coaching that way. If I'm a coach, the performance of the team and the leadership of the team and the standards of the team, they are my responsibility. I am the coach. It's my job. Everyone on this team is my responsibility. And if the standards aren't up to par, if the standards aren't where they want, it's not a player's fault. It's mine. So I'm not asking a player to lead because I'm not. If a player isn't going to lead, I have to. Let me ask you this question. And a question, I'm going to ask this question to Keith, but I want you as a listener, all of you listening, I want you to answer this question in your own mind. And I've been asking some college staff this. In your career, coach, how many teams have you coached on that you would say have been totally player-led? Keith, how many teams have you been on that have been totally player-led?
I could probably think of, 27 years, maybe that 5, 6, 7 range where I'd say they were truly player-led teams, strong player-led teams.
So once every 4 or 5 years, once every 4 or 5 years it happened, yes?
Yes.
Yeah, so... And by the way, that's about the same answer everybody else has for the most part. You know, there's some variable and variance in there, but that's about everybody's answer, which means what does that mean over the course of your career year to year? More often than not, like 4 times out of 5, what kind of team are you going to have? A team that requires you to lead, because this is what the act of leading young people is. They're not ready. More often than not, they're not ready. And we're forcing or pushing or expecting something they're not going to give. And I would go so far as to say this. I think there's two parts of this. And I think they go together, although most people think they're different. Now, I like taking two things that people think operate on opposite ends of the spectrum and mashing them together and viewing them at the same time. Number one, getting young people to lead other young people has always been and will always be one of the biggest challenges. Like that's just a difficult task. It's a labor of love. It's just a difficult task. So understand what we're asking for. Second piece is, let's push these two things together. One, it just is extremely rare and more often than not doesn't happen. Most teams, maybe even say almost every team, is not player led, because that's more of the natural order of how this is going to go. At the same time, if a team isn't player led because the players aren't good enough leaders and they don't do their responsibility of leading and hold the line of the culture, who was the person ultimately responsible for that failure?
It's the leader. It's the coach.
There you go. If a team is incapable of being player-led because the players aren't good enough leaders who don't take enough responsibility, they don't understand the culture, they don't have enough self-awareness, they don't manage their emotions, all the different reasons that you know would go into why a team isn't player-led, or why a team doesn't hold the standard, or why players don't do those things required to win championships. Who's ultimately responsible for leading players to that place? The coach. I mean, if you don't believe that's your job as a coach, I don't know what to tell you. You and I would have a fundamental disagreement on what the role of a coach is. That's the job. So let's put two things together. Your job, right? This is where it's like, for me, like, this is where my heart rate goes up because I love this. This is where the excitement and the joy of this profession is. Your job is to get young people to do things that most young people don't do and are incredibly hard to do. And it rarely happens. And when the young people don't do it, the burden falls on you as a coach. And every 5 years, if you're really good, if you're really, really good, you'll get player-led teams who pick up that torch and don't require you to do as much, and they own the culture. You'll make that'll happen to you 2 out of 4 years if you're really good at this. Every 4 years, it'll happen twice, which means 50% of the time, 50% of your teams, almost all the leadership is going to have to come from who and from where? From you and your staff. And that's okay. You don't have to be a player-led team. You just need to be a team with leadership. If it's got to come from you, then it's got to come from you. Let's roll.
Principle versus style is the next topic we're going to discuss here. BK mentions the accepting of other styles of coaching and asking if the principles that you believe can be achieved through different styles. He also mentions making sure your staff is free to use their own style, but maintains the same principles.
So the way I overcome my attachment to my own style so that I don't degrade or undermine or miss the value in other styles is I always ask myself one question. Would the principle that matters to me be violated by that style? Or I'll ask it another way. Is it even possible for the principles I believe in to be achieved through this style that I'm observing? Is it possible? And here's the point. If anybody has ever done it, then yeah, it's possible. So the question is really, is it possible for the principle you believe in, you rely on, and you count on to be fulfilled or executed through this style that you see? Or maybe a different way. Is it possible for the principle you believe in to be fulfilled by any other style than your own? And the answer is, of course. Of course it's possible for that principle to be fulfilled through some style different than your own. It's just that you don't like it like that because it's not your personal style. And so part of being a great coach, part of being a great person in this life, Keith, is being able to have the humility to say that, you know what, the principles I believe in can be achieved through a wide range of styles. I have mine and I like them, and other people have theirs and they like theirs. What I want to make sure is that the people who work with me on my team, you know, people I'm interacting with, I want to make sure that we get focused on the same principles. And then I want to make sure they've got enough freedom to use their styles. Now, ultimately, if our styles conflict too intensely, then obviously we'll, you know, if it's fingernails on the chalkboard, you know, and like it's impossible to be around the style. Okay, well then let's have that question, but let's still lock that into, look, I it's not that I don't believe in the principles. Like we don't disagree on the aim. It's just we go about it too differently to really get along this way. And so, you know, it's better for us to work separately or whatever, but still don't undermine that person's commitment to the principles or don't try to undermine their character because they have a different style. So that's what I look at, Keith, is I look at, is it possible for the principle to be achieved and lived through a style different than my own? And specifically, if I'm encountering somebody who has a different style than me, is I look at them and I say, is this style preventative from achieving the principle that I'm going after that I think matters the most here? And most of the time, the answer is no. Almost every time. I mean, very rarely do I encounter a style that is completely incapable of upholding principles that I believe in. It just doesn't happen very often. But it forces me to have a different lens. Is this person aiming for a different principle than me? Or are they just coming at it through a different style? And let me just expand it up real fast. The place that's really easy to see, and we're not going to have this conversation because this is not the place to have it. And frankly, I don't even really care other than the fact that I observe it. This is happening on the grand political scale right now. is everybody is watching Styles for the most part, and then confusing them for principles, and then just absolutely going nuclear on everyone. It's what's happening at the large political scale. Like, everybody's looking at style and just getting mad at style, and then equating that with a principle. You know, it's like, you know, I can look at any politician, right, over the last 15 years and be like, look, I don't like that style. I don't like that style. But if I look at principle, yeah, most of them aren't necessarily violating some core principle for me. It's just, I just don't agree with the style. You know, like, they're all trying to help the country in this way. Well, not all of them. Right? You know, some of them are trying to make themselves rich. It's like, okay, well, we could go over those things. But we're just not even doing this at a grand scale. And so bringing it down, and we don't control any of that. But I do think people would be better if they looked and said, all right, is this a style or a principle issue? I'm like, really, really look at it. Really look at it, especially when there's conflict. And obviously there's a lot of conflict going on at the political spectrum here right now. Most of it, you know, useless and not real conflict. It's fake. Bringing it back down to our world, though, humility and empathy is a really important skill here. Really important skill here. And I think the first thing we ought to wrestle with when there's conflict is, okay, let's separate the principle from the style. And look, for some of you, this is going to be harder than you think, because you don't have a lot of reps at it. And you think you're talking principle and you're just talking style. For example, if you're mad at somebody for the way they said something, you are off principle and you're on style. I'm not saying style doesn't matter. I'm just saying you're not talking principle anymore. You're talking style. As soon as you say you shouldn't talk to somebody like that, right? That's a style preference, not principle. Like, that's what we got to look at. You know, any amount of this work is better than zero. And so keeping this heuristic in mind that we talked about earlier of style, swim with the current, principle, stand like a rock. Well, if you're going to stand like a rock, you better make sure you're not standing like a rock and fighting over styles, because that's just silly.
In this next segment, we talk about what exactly the phrase trust your gut means and how to manage those gut feelings and evaluate them. Accepting that trusting your gut pretty much always results in 50-50 odds of success is one way to think about this, and that you really have to accurately track those gut feelings to be able to evaluate them. Let's take a listen to what BK has to say.
When somebody says, trust your gut, what do they mean? Like, what does somebody actually mean when they say, you got to trust your gut? What are they suggesting we trust? What are they suggesting you trust? Is it a feeling, an impulse? I mean, is it a calculation? Is it trusting your experience? Is it trusting your conscience? Is it trusting your value system? Is it trusting your intuition? Is it trusting your plan? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's so loose.
And that's the issue with the phrase, right? Because think of it this way, Brian, like, there are coaches who can use that phrase and are 40 years into their career, and with things they've seen over and over again, they might say they trust their gut, but they've collected that data. It's become part of their thought process. I'm sure a lot of those guys have survived that long because they do have some kind of system. So to say that they're just acting on intuition is kind of it doesn't paint really the true picture of what's going on as far as a thought process with those guys. When you take that to a coach who's maybe been in it for a couple of years and doesn't have those experiences, and you tell him to trust his gut, you know, again, it goes back. There's way more variable that he doesn't understand.
Right. And that's a good starting point. So, you know, because there's a bunch of things that we could go into, and this is a long, you know, once we start getting into what, it's not really the gut, and there's so much more that goes into it. Obviously, this is, you know, this is a conversation for the rest of our lives, not 30, 45 minute podcast. So this is just opening up the topic. But trusting your gut point blank is not good advice. Now, it's not bad advice, as in don't do it. But it's not good advice because it's a directive. Trust your gut. Well, the point is, Sometimes, right? Sometimes. But if you knew when to trust your gut beforehand and when not to trust your gut beforehand, you would have avoided at least 8 major mistakes you've made in your life. Maybe more than 8. In fact, definitely more than 8. I know I would have. I would have avoided 80. Where it's like, hey, trust your gut. And then I acted on my gut, and my gut was wrong. It pointed me in the wrong direction. It told me the wrong thing to do. Sometimes actively wrong. Sometimes the feeling I had was an impulsive, selfish rush to judgment, try to win it all in the moment rather than do the work, take a shortcut. Sometimes my gut was just point blank wrong, and I trusted it. Other times my gut was just a miscalculation. Other times my gut was a guess. I trusted it, but it was just a guess. My gut said it, and it was based on nothing. It was based on a feeling, a whim, a flight in my head. I thought I could do it. It was based on overconfidence. Other times, my trust in my gut, and it was a miscalculation. Like I was thinking about when we're prepping for this, say, trust your gut. And I'll come back to some, you know, what do we want to do instead? But I was thinking about it, like, people say, trust your gut. You ever play like roulette or blackjack and watch people say, oh, trust your gut. You watch what happens to people who play roulette and blackjack when it's trust your gut. Everybody's convinced. They see six reds in a row in roulette. And they're like, oh, a black's got to come. And you're like, oh, my gut's telling me a black's coming. And it's like they evaluate whether their gut was right after it happens. And when it was right, they're like, I told you. And it was wrong. It was like, oh, dang, I can't believe it. But they don't go back and then say, oh, okay, well, my gut said it. And then my gut was completely wrong. And then like bury that into their data bank of, well, that was my gut being completely wrong. I better not trust it as quickly next time. That's not what people do. So there's all kinds of things that get regarded as our gut. And again, just real quick, right? There's feelings, impulses, calculations, experiences, our conscience, our value system, our intuition, an actual system that we use, an observation, input from somebody else. There's all kinds of stuff that's trusting your gut. But let's do this. What if we compare trust your gut to other advice, which is, what about changing your mind? What about evolving? How do you put both of those things together? So I don't want people to trust their gut because I don't even know that you know what your gut is. I mean, if I were to ask you, Keith, and you were to just for yourself, somebody says, trust your gut. What does your mind tell you somebody is telling you to do? Like Keith Grabowski, you hear somebody say, hey, trust your gut, Keith. What do you interpret that as meaning for you? Like what's somebody informing you to do?
To me, it's don't think about what your brain's telling you to do. Think about what your heart's telling you to do. I use that in quotation marks. But to me, that's the feeling of, you know, that phrase anytime I hear it.
Mm. Okay. And I think that's solid, right? And I wouldn't say that's wrong. I would say that's good. I would say that's definitely part of it. And let's take that in coaching. Okay, here we go. Don't do what your brain's telling you to do. Do what your heart's telling you to do. How often in coaching is the smart, wise, even necessary thing to do that your head tells you you need to do this, the thing that you actually have to do, but it's hard for your heart because it's going to hurt somebody's feelings, or you have to let go of somebody on the team who is toxic and difficult, and you know it's going to be very difficult for that particular individual? How often is the smart, wise thing to do very hard for your heart to accept in coaching?
Well, I think that comes up often, especially as we roll towards, you know, the end of the season. A lot of coaches going through and evaluating their personnel, might be their coaching staff, it might be certain players on the team, et cetera, that you have to make some of those decisions. I mean, it might even be evaluating whether to stay in that particular job or not. And those kinds of changes certainly have, you know, implications with feelings as well.
Yep. And, you know, obviously we won't, I'm not going to name names, But look at in college football, how often coaches make decisions about players to keep and give chances to and players not to. And a lot of coaches get crushed. I've heard Nick Saban talk about this. A lot of coaches get crushed because they give their heart to players who make mistakes, which 18 to 22 year olds do. And sometimes those mistakes are bad. Sometimes they're not little mistakes. They're big mistakes. Sometimes they're legal mistakes. And where's the line about when to use your heart and help the player, keep them in the program, give them a second, even a third chance, pulling them into the system. This is what I've heard Saban talk about, where does that player have a better chance to build a good life for himself? If he's in the program and in the structure, or out of the program and not in that kind of a structure where he's got that leadership and guidance and training and help, or if he is detached from it and cut off from the team because he made a mistake. And you know, but then you watch other coaches, and again, and I'm not naming names, but you watch other coaches who try to help people who are in difficult situations or try to work with people, and then it doesn't work out, and then they get crushed by the public and by the media and by everybody else for hiding things and for doing this and for doing that, when you know people, and a lot of times it was decisions based on what you just said, right? I'm not using my head, I'm using my heart here. And it's hard, because the point is, it's not always the right decision. Sometimes it's the wrong one. Sometimes we got to let it go. But it's hard. It's hard. And this is what I get asked by high school coaches a lot, because it's different than college, is what about a kid, a young person who, you know, you've been pouring into, but they're just a really, really toxic player on the team, and you're trying to decide whether or not to keep him or not. But he feels like he's costing you a lot. And your heart is telling you keep the kid, but your head is saying it's costing you the rest of the team. Man, that's tough. Your gut feels in conflict there. So, you know, I think if we had a bunch of other people on this call, you'd hear a number of other things about trusting your gut. Well, trust your gut is do what feels right. Well, again, you know, part of the human experience is what feels right is really different. And I would say, if you're going to be consistent about what feels right across all situations, and you know what's right in one situation, you hold on to that across all situations, or you hold that standard, okay, I think we're now moving in the right direction. But I think that there's a couple things that we have to do. I think the first piece is this. When we say trust your gut, I think here's the first thing, overarching, this is what we've got to do. Because I don't believe in the advice, trust your gut. But I believe in the sentiment, because I am somebody who myself, personally, I operate by, I think if people were to observe me, I think other people would look at me and say, boy, that's somebody who operates by a trust his gut, you know, mentality or mindset. And in some respects, they'd be right. But I don't actually believe in the advice, trust your gut, point blank or without check. What I believe is this. I believe that if you're going to use some version of trust your gut, there's a requirement that precedes it. And that's two. There's two pieces. Number one is if you're going to trust your gut, you have to be willing to accept the consequences, good or bad, before you make the decision to trust your gut, which I don't think people do. I think people want to trust their gut, and then they want to defend themselves afterward, regardless. Call it the right decision every time. I'll trust my gut, Keith, but I will trust my gut recognizing that it's a 500 choice, meaning it's 50-50. I accept in moments when I, quote unquote, do that, trust my gut, I accept that 50% of the time it is not going to work. And I accept it beforehand. And number two, so first, you have to accept good or bad consequences before you make the decision to trust your gut, and that it's going to be about 50-50. You might go on a run, but that just means that what? Like if you want to go on a run where you make a bunch of really great calls, that just means that what? Later on, you're going to have a run the opposite direction, and you're going to make a bunch of bad calls based on gut. The second piece is if you're going to say trust your gut, you have to track how often it works and how often it doesn't, so that you get a more accurate and honest view of what trusting your gut actually means, which is going to even out to 50-50 over time. Those are the two requirements if you're going to operate by this. Because people say trust your gut, and then people operate by, oh, I trust my gut. And then they like selectively evaluate the times when their gut was right, and they think that their gut is more accurate and truthful than it really is. Does that make sense?
Some really good highlights there from the 2019 Leadership Journey with Brian Kite. That whole playlist is something we'll share in our show notes. So if you missed the 2019 season, the 15 episodes, we did put those together in a playlist, and you could go back through those. And as you see in these highlights, there's always a lot of great information from BK, things that are going to help you as a coach, as a person, as a father, etc. Be sure to check those out if you have not already. Follow all we're doing on Twitter at FBDEVCoach. Follow me on Twitter at Coach K Grabowski. And check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling at footballdevelopment.com. Tomorrow, we have an episode which features PJ Fleck at our national conference. And then we'll follow up Thursday with our first deep dive on defense.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.